said the day of elections is a day for the Iranian people that will essentially determine the fate of the country for the coming years. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un says his country needs to get fully prepared for confrontation with the US in order to protect the dignity of the country. Also ahead, Israeli forces attack Palestinian protesters marching in occupied Jerusalem al-Quds against a controversial settlers' rally. Welcome to World News. We're live from the Iranian capital, Tehran. Thank you very much for joining us. We're going to kick off this bulletin with the latest updates on Iran's presidential election. The leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, was among the first to cast his ballot in the capital, Tehran, and made some remarks. He said the day of elections is a day for the Iranian people that will essentially determine the fate of the country for the coming years. He says the day belongs to the people, the election belongs to the people's presence at the polling stations, those casting their ballots will determine their future for several years. He described it as a brave national test. The leader also called on voters to cast their ballots. Even a single vote is of importance, saying, "Don't think nothing is going to happen with just one vote. Every vote counts." And the leader said, as he noted, as he does always, highlights this point, that it's always better to vote as early as possible and not leave it late. More than 59 million people are eligible to cast their ballots in the country's 13th presidential election. The minimum voting age in Iran is 18. The opening and closing times for polling locations inside Iran are 7 a.m. to midnight and can be subjected to a two-hour extension. There will be 67,000 polling stations across Iran, as well as more than 230 in other countries for expatriate voters. The spokesman for Iran's Constitutional Council has held a press conference in Tehran to elaborate on the upcoming presidential election slated for June 18. Yusuf Jalali reports from the press's venue.
The Constitutional Council, which vets the nominees and oversees the election, held a presser to elaborate on the upcoming vote and to take questions from Iranian and international media. The majority of the questions focused on the vetting procedure. In this election, many heavyweight hopefuls from both the reformist and principalist camps were not approved by the council.
The Constitutional Council works based on Articles 150 and 110 of Iran's constitution and the election law that is passed by the parliament. The conditions that are stipulated in those articles are our criteria for qualifying or disqualifying a candidate. The results are then put into a vote and the council members will discuss whether to approve or disapprove of a nominee.
Out of 592 hopefuls who signed up for the race, the Constitutional Council approved 7 nominees. At the last minute, 3 candidates stepped out of the race. Mohsen Mehralizadeh withdrew in favor of the now only reformist runner, Abdel Nasser Hemati. Saeed Jalili and Ali Reza Zarqani dropped out to rally behind Sayed Ibrahim Raisi, the sitting judiciary chief and the flag bearer of the principalist camp. Asked about the criteria for approving the candidates, the Constitutional Council's spokesman said the watchdog body is impartial with regards to the candidates' political affiliation.
The Constitutional Council has never vetted the nominees based on their political approach. Previous elections and the current one attest to our impartiality in reviewing the qualification of the candidates. Even in this election, you can see contenders from different political backgrounds and with different approaches running.
Amid the coronavirus pandemic, the election is being held with strict health protocols in effect. Campaigning was also conducted with limited rallying, and candidates instead campaigned through televised speeches and debates. Iranians will go to polls on June 18th to choose their next president. The Constitutional Council says it vetted the candidates based on Iran's constitution and did not apply any personal considerations in the process. All in all, this time the election was not a clash of political parties, but a contest of policies. Policies that offer the best cure for the ailing Iranian economy. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Iran's chief negotiator Abbas Araghchi says talks on reviving the 2015 nuclear agreement have come closer than ever to fruition. In an interview with Al Jazeera, Araghchi noted that some essential issues are still being negotiated. He said Tehran wants to make sure that the United States will not repeat its unilateral withdrawal from the nuclear deal with Iran. The Kremlin says Russian President Vladimir Putin has told his U.S. counterpart that he expects Washington to fully return to the accord known as the JCPOA. Iran, along with the European Union and six world powers, thrashed out the landmark agreement in 2015 after years of negotiations. However, the U.S. pulled out of the deal in 2018, reimposing sanctions on Iran. Tehran says it wants all sanctions removed in a verifiable manner. Political commentator David Yerubian says the Biden administration needs a foreign policy win by reviving the JCPOA.
Well, the Biden administration needs this. It needs a foreign policy win, if you will. And this is because it has essentially doubled down on all of the failed foreign policy initiatives of the Trump administration. Venezuela, Cuba, Yemen, Syria, it's Israel policy. It's aggression towards Russia and China. And I believe that this is how it links to the G7 conference, irrespective of any positive commentary related to the exchange between Putin and Biden. The United States made it clear at the G7 that Russia is to be perceived and treated as a threat and China as a challenge. And so in that context, the United States desperately needs a foreign policy win, if you will, and if not a win, just to take the Iran issue off the table for American foreign policy elites so they can focus on this new Cold War 2.0 that they're trumpeting against Russia and China.
North Korean leader Kim Jong-un says his country needs to prepare for both dialogue and confrontation with the United States under President Joe Biden. In remarks during the meeting of the ruling Workers' Party, Kim outlined his strategy for relations with Washington. He stressed that Pyongyang needs to get fully prepared for confrontation in order to protect the dignity of the country. North Korea has already accused the Biden of pursuing a, quote, hostile policy. Biden's predecessor, Donald Trump, made headlines but little diplomatic progress with a series of face-to-face meetings with Kim. Biden says he will not pursue that policy unless North Korea negotiates its nuclear arsenal with a concrete plan. Israeli forces attack Palestinian protesters in the occupied Jerusalem Al-Quds, arresting a number of people. Palestinians were protesting outside the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound against a controversial march by Israeli settlers on Tuesday. During the march, Israeli settlers insulted Islam's Prophet Muhammad and chanted death to Arabs under the protection of Israeli forces. The so-called March of Flag also triggered protests in the Gaza Strip, where resistance groups warned the regime of consequences for allowing such a controversial move. Israel, meanwhile, has carried out airstrikes on the besieged at the Gaza Strip, hitting at least 10 Palestinian targets near the cities of Beit Lahia and Beit Hanun. No casualties have been reported so far. Tel Aviv claims the air raids were in response to Palestinians sending incendiary balloons towards the occupied territories. Also, Palestinian resistance groups have shot down and seized an Israeli drone in the west of the Gaza Strip. The Israeli strikes followed Israel's 11-day aggression against Gaza last month. The conflict ended on May 21st after a ceasefire. Nearly 260 Palestinians, half of them women and children, were killed. Palestinians fired thousands of rockets into Israel in response, killing a dozen people. Earlier, we were joined by Ashraf Shannon, our correspondent in Gaza, who gave us an update on the latest round of Israeli airstrikes on the Gaza Strip.
Israeli fighter jets attacked at least 10 security posts that belong to Hamas's military wing, the Din Qassam Brigades, over the past few hours. The attacks targeted the northern Gaza Strip towns of Beit Lahia, Jabalia, and Beit Hanun, and also Israeli warplanes attacked at least one security post in the south of Gaza City. as well as in the southern Gaza Strip town of Khan Yunis. Meanwhile, Palestinian resistance factions fired their heavy machine guns towards Israeli drones and also towards areas in the east of the enclave, prompting the Israel so-called Iron Dome missile interception system to be launched, basically proving that this missile interception system is a failure, as it was triggered by the machine gun fire from the Gaza Strip.
The UK reports over 11,000 new COVID-19 infections, its highest daily rise in cases in nearly 4 months. Official figures show the number of new deaths has also risen to 19 from 9, reported on Wednesday. The government on Monday announced a decision to delay the lifting of restrictions due to the spread of the new Delta strain first detected in India. Experts are concerned that rising case numbers will turn into death tolls similar to previous waves. A government report published on Thursday warned that cases are rising exponentially across England, driven by mostly unvaccinated age groups. Britain has suffered Europe's highest coronavirus death toll of around 128,000 lives. UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson is standing by his health secretary Matt Hancock after former aide Dominic Cummings leaked messages in which Hancock was described as hopeless in his handling of the pandemic by the PM. The bitter infighting and war of words laid bare the chaotic nature of the Johnson government as they battled the spread of COVID. Amina Taylor has more on this political soap opera.
Just a quick one. When are you going to...
He might have emerged the loser in a bitter internal power struggle inside Downing Street. But Dominic Cummings is reminding his former allies inside the Conservative Party that a wounded animal is at its most dangerous. Prime Minister Johnson is standing by his health secretary, even after Cummings leaked messages where Johnson branded the man in charge of handling Britain's COVID crisis as expletive hopeless and suggested handing over some of his responsibilities.
Dominic Cummings is doing this because he's his own axe to grind following his sacking as Johnson's political aide. It's clear I don't think we could trust him as far as you could throw him, but at the same time he's shedding light on what seems to be a chaotic and inefficient government whose handling of the beginnings of this pandemic was truly disastrous in terms of the number of people dying, the highest in Europe.
In an escalation of tensions between Cummings and Hancock, MPs were told back in May that the health secretary had lied to the prime minister about testing hospital patients before they were released into care homes at the start of the pandemic. In a 7,000-word blog, Cummings described Johnson and co. of rewriting history and said if number 10 is prepared to lie so deeply and widely about such vital issues of life and death last year, it cannot now be trusted either on COVID or any other crucial issue of war and peace.
Hell hath no fury like a special advisor scorned, and Dominic Cummings is making life inside the Conservative Party for his former colleagues an absolute nightmare. After all, he's the man with an agenda and the inside information to follow through.
Cummings's refusal to slink off into the political wilderness must be a source of great concern for the government, who must be dreading what he will reveal next.
I don't think he's particularly bothered about the damage he might inflict on the Conservative Party, or indeed his former boss Boris Johnson. Clearly his anger over his sacking has overcome any reservations he's got.
This might be unfolding like a poorly written telenovela. But the public will do well to be reminded that these individuals at the center of this political drama, they were the ones in charge, making decisions that may well have cost thousands of people their lives. Amina Taylor, London.
Russia has warned that Ukraine's membership of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization is a red line for Moscow. Earlier, the Ukrainian president announced that his country will soon be joining the alliance, but his American counterpart said that Kiev needs to meet some criteria before its membership. Here is a report.
For ages, joining the North Atlantic Treaty Organization has been a long-sought dream for Ukraine. NATO countries have a mutual defense pact, meaning if one nation is attacked, the others will join in their response. By this, Kiev, which has been engaged in a domestic conflict with pro-Russian forces, is seeking to get NATO's help to get rid of the militias. On Monday, the alliance's annual summit in Brussels wrapped up with the release of a joint communique that reaffirmed NATO's 2008 decision for Ukraine to become a member through a Membership Action Plan, or MAP, without setting a timetable. Shortly afterward, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky appeared to announce a change on Twitter shortly before U.S. President Joe Biden began a news conference in Brussels where he was attending a NATO summit. He tweeted that NATO leaders confirmed that Ukraine will become a member of the alliance. But NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg made it clear that no such action was imminent. Stoltenberg said, "To agree on the membership action plan, you need a consensus among 30 allies. This was the focus of the summit." Biden stressed that Kiev does not have the go-ahead to join NATO. The U.S. president said Ukraine needs to clean up corruption and to meet other criteria before it gets into the action plan. However, he affirmed Washington's support for Ukraine's territorial integrity. Biden also met with his Russian counterpart Vladimir Putin for the first time in Geneva, Switzerland on Wednesday. The two discussed a number of issues, including resumption of diplomatic ties and the return of expelled envoys, but apparently made no mention of Ukraine's membership in NATO. On Thursday, the Kremlin expressed concern over talks for Ukraine to join the alliance. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said Ukraine's NATO membership would be a red line for Moscow, noting that Russia is watching the issue closely. Ukraine has been locked in a tense tug-of-war with pro-Russian forces ever since the Crimean Peninsula rejoined Russia following the ouster of Ukraine's president Viktor Yanukovych in 2014. The conflict on the country's east has killed more than 4,000 people.
And that brings an end to our bulletin for this hour, but don't go away.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
The 13th presidential election. Iran's 13th presidential election is going to be held on Friday, 18th of June. The over four-decade history of the Islamic Republic of Iran shows that people's turnout in elections has had a direct impact on the might of the Islamic system. The leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, recently said in this regard, "The result of elections will affect the life of the people and country for years to come, and I hope that the 18th of June election, contrary to what the enemies want, will be a source of dignity and pride for the Islamic Republic of Iran." The leader, referring to the opposition of enemies against elections, since the victory of the Islamic Revolution, said, "During the past 42 years, the enemy's agenda has been this way, that before the election, they say people will not participate. Then after the people's participation, they say that the election has been engineered, and about the elected person as president, they say that he has no authority." The leader added, "They try to suggest to the people that elections and the election of president are useless." Election is a symbol of democracy and benefits maximum capacity in society in order to advance all affairs in cultural, political, social and economic spheres. Thus, there is no doubt in the necessity of elections and its positive effect on society as a whole. However, some persons have raised doubts which mainly have originated in other issues like their own malfeasance and mismanagement. And sometimes enemies fan the flames of discontent to question the system's entirety. Participation in elections and determination of the fate of the country, in addition to the mentioned points, is the political, social and legal right of every individual. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said in this regard, "This is a right and an obligation. It is the right of each and every person to raise their opinion. This is their obligation too." The leader added, "Everybody should come and participate in the election. This participation will make the Islamic Republic system strong and will maintain its endurance and longevity and permanence and will cause the country to remain in the shelter of full security." The leader made it clear that election is the greatest symbol of national might, which can cause the formation and continuity of civil society and will provide necessary ground for continuation of progress, growth in the country and the Iranian nation, despite all threats and pressures from the outside. Referring to some concerns about the possibility of a low turnout, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, said, "I believe that the rate of people's participation has nothing to do with this or that name. Rather, people look for a person who has strong managerial skills and is highly efficient for solving the country's problems. And it doesn't matter for people what title this person has or from which faction he's from. Although this issue might matter for political groups, it does not for the ordinary people, the public." The leader reiterated, "It is important that the candidates convince the people that they know the problems faced by society, by ordinary people, that they have good managerial skills, they're prudent, honest, and are able to administer the country. In this way, with God's grace, people will have a massive turnout at the ballot box." Ayatollah Khamenei focused on the main challenge facing the country, saying, "Now the urgent and main issue of the country is the economy, and the candidates should present their programs and solutions to improve the economy and remove the problems faced by ordinary people and convince them that they're able to solve the economic problems facing the nation." Dear listeners, Asadullah Badamchian, an activist and member of the Unity Council, said that on the difference of political parties in Iran and non-Islamic systems of government, Badamchian said, "A God-oriented party examines who is the best candidate, the most qualified person for the office of president. Thus, a truly Islamic party is after introducing the most qualified person for every responsibility, no matter if he's not a member of the party. Badam Chan made it clear that this culture has caused this party to move on in line with the values of the Islamic Revolution since the victory of the Islamic Revolution. Hossein Naqashi, a member of the Unity of Nation Party, says, "What is of high importance for the reformist current is trust building in society anew. Trust building should be done for the people and for candidates to introduce their programs and also their manifestos, and persons must be defended strongly. Therefore, this consensus-forming body should first base its plan and priority on trust-building among the reformist current and put its voting base among the people. This event will not happen unless the people are assured that through programs and manifestos which will be put into action, this will support the people and will create positive change for them in their lives. Persons who are brave enough to counter corruption and discrimination and stand against the groups which are opposed to change. It means persons should be elected who have the courage in their past performance and in their programs, the possibility that this change will take place over the next 4 years." Spokesman for the Guardian Council, Abu Sari Katkhodai, says in this regard, "In some years we have had prominent figures, while this year we had a different political climate. Of course, we emphasize on presence of those from a spectrum of backgrounds and political backgrounds, and different political tastes have all been catered for. Campaigns are among the important phases of every election, as they help heat up the people's turnout. It is quite clear that the candidates have entered the scene of the contest with a variety of political and social inclinations and different views on various issues. Thus, they put forward their views and programs and manifestos on different problems, and people will pick the best qualified candidate after examining each and every one of their views and programs."
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, and let us contemplate on what the Holy Prophet's eighth infallible heir, Imam Ali ibn Musa al-Reza, peace be upon him, has to say regarding good neighbors. "Use good neighborhood with the graces, for they are wild. They will not return if they leave." Thank you.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz, every day from 15:20 to 16:20 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz, every day from 19:20 to 20:20 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat, or BAT 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked in
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars. In the name of Allah, the All-Beneficent, the All-Merciful. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to another episode of Ulama Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a speech by Ayatollah Meshkini.
صادق می‌فرماید اگر چون که عملت کم هم باشد، اگه گناه نداشته باشید، اون عمل کمت بسیار زیبا جلوه می‌دهد.
Now Imam Sadiq tells us all that we keep the few number of our good deeds, and not waste them by committing sins. Our pure deeds will be observed by our imams, and they will shine, but our sins will waste all our good deeds. We will lose the record of our good deeds by committing sins. We say prayer, but when finished, the angels will return this prayer to us. What kind of prayer was it? Where was your attention and awareness? You just did the actions, but you were thinking of something else. Dear brothers and sisters, let's be aware of our deeds in worshiping. Let's purify the way we say prayer and make it beautiful. Let's try to put spirit into our deeds and not to waste them. Let's not forget the progeny of Prophet Muhammad and our imams. It's just enough to call them sometimes and wherever we are. Remember this phrase from the supplication of Jama al-Kabira, which says, "We are full of sins, and our record of deeds is full of bad actions. It is only your words and entreats that can erase them." Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of Ulama Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by the late Ayatollah Meshkini. Please visit our website, which is parstoday.com, and by clicking on the tab Call of Islam on the top right corner of the page, you can listen to this program as well as the other programs of this radio station. And you can send an email to englishradio@irib.ir. Until next time, we leave you in Allah's care.
Elders in an Indonesian town are rewarded with live chickens if they get vaccinated for COVID-19. Officials in the town of Sipanas launched the program after the vaccination campaign faced a low turnout from the public. Many have been reluctant to receive a jab over various reasons. Some say they were afraid they would die if they get vaccinated. Now it seems that the rewards they take have worked well, and more people are willing to get a shot. Officials in the Indonesian town say they go door to door to give the elderly jabs and chickens to show their appreciation. Technology has come in handy to rescue animals in disaster zones. American cinematographer Douglas Throne has used a high-tech infrared drone to save animals from fire or storm or even stuck in trees. The drone he uses has a large thermal camera, a spotlight, and zoom lens. The good point is that the aerial vehicle does not make too much noise, therefore it does not scare away animals.
So what I do is I fly infrared drones primarily at night over disaster areas after a hurricane or a fire hits, and I look for people's pets, whether it be cats or dogs, and I also look for injured wildlife, and then either I or rescue crews will go in and rescue the animals after I spot the animals after these natural disasters.
Throne has so far rescued hundreds of stranded animals in various places in the U.S. and Australia. Emergency services have allowed him to participate in rescue efforts after making sure that the drone works well to achieve its goal.
Children have their own ways of remembering the dead. In Gaza, Palestinian kids fly kites in memory of their peers who lost their lives in the recent Israeli onslaught. Dozens of kids participated in the event, holding kites bearing the pictures of 66 little victims. According to the organizers, the goal was to send a message to people around the world that Palestinian kids have the right to live a free and happy life. The children said their dream is to fly in the sky without any restrictions or wars. A herd of wild Asian elephants in China has turned into international stars after leaving their natural habitat in Yunnan province. The herd of 15 elephants is said to have left home in southwest China 15 months ago, but it was in April when they grabbed officials' attention after they were spotted by locals. The elephants have so far trekked nearly 500 kilometers across the country. They have traveled through villages and towns and even stopped for a rest. Local authorities have welcomed these mammoth travelers with treats of sweet corn and bananas. They are monitoring the elephants' movements with drones while keeping them away from residential areas.
Chinese grandma has given a dazzling display of her masterly kung fu performance at a martial arts competition. The 98-year-old woman and her son took the stage as a curtain raiser to the event. The duo put on a kung fu show before a large crowd of spectators who were impressed by her skillful gestures. She was invited to the competition to act as a judge.
I started practicing martial arts when I was only 5. I would box every day, learning movements like chopping, pushing palm, and thrusting palm. Though I am old now, my strength hasn't gone.
Zhang says she's inherited her family's martial arts. She's rumored to have a sense of justice from a very young age and try to help others, which earned her quite a reputation where she lives. Traditional martial arts have been passed down in the Zhongqing village located in Zhejiang province for 500 years. Go to Italy, where Mount Etna has put on an eye-catching show with its spectacular eruptions. Red-hot lava fountains and plumes of smoke spewed up into the sky. The main eruption was located at the southeastern crater of the volcano. Mount Etna is Europe's tallest active volcano. It's located above the Sicilian town of Catania. It up and erupts, but rarely causes damage. However, nearby residents have to deal with ash showers. Geological studies show that Mount Etna has been active for more than 2 million years now. Egypt has opened its first archaeological replica factory in an attempt to promote its culture worldwide. The factory was inaugurated in response to people's demand for having detailed copies of ancient treasures. So far, over 6,400 high-quality replicas of ancient Egyptian artifacts have been produced. More than 150 artists work to make the goods out of stone, wood, and even gold.
The materials with which these are made are high quality. The highest and most elegant materials are being used to make these samples, and the materials are very close to those used to make the original artifacts.
The models have certificates showing that they are identical copies of the original artifacts. Each replica also has a barcode that provides extra information about the item. The factory is located in Kalyuba, about 35 kilometers northeast of the capital, Cairo.
Now, a lot of people don't like rats and find them disgusting most of the time. However, the rodents are doing life-saving work in Cambodia. Now, the Southeast Asian nation has deployed a new squad of African giant pouched rats to sniff out old landmines. The new recruits have shown an exceptional ability at their task, with their handlers claiming 100% accuracy. There are now nearly 50 demining rats working in the field in Cambodia. The country started using the animal services in 2016, and they have helped detect and clear hundreds of landmines since. Last year, an especially heroic rat called Magawa attracted global fame after receiving a gold medal for his work. The hero rat, who is now retired, detected over 71 landmines.
A muralist from Greece is blending mythology with graffiti and street art to depict how COVID-19 has impacted lives around the globe. Ficus Antonius has painted the walls of many cities around the globe. He is now in the Cypriot capital, Nicosia, to continue his work. His latest artwork depicts Americus, a Cypriot mythical figure who was punished by the gods and turned into a plant. The Greek artist believes this theme is similar to the situation people around the globe have experienced since the pandemic began. He explains many people have grown roots because they're staying in one place for so long. Two British artists have brought a combination of fun art and environmental concerns to the sidelines of the G7 summit. They have created a modern-day version of famous sculpture carved into America's Mount Rushmore. This time, it's called Mount Recyclemore. Joe Rush and Alex Rackage have made a sculpture of G7 leaders with electronic waste. They say their major goal is to raise awareness about the amount of unrecycled tech and gadgets, the damage they cause to the environment, and the ways to combat the issue internationally.
Well, what I'd like them to do, the leaders of the G7 conference, is I'd like them all to talk to each other and work out a plan that isn't just shifting the problem from one country to another, you know, but actually is a plan that we all work on together, which is how to deal with this waste and how to stop producing so much waste and how to recycle things. And all these issues have got to be dealt with globally. They can't be dealt with nationally because that's where the problem is. So we need them all to get together, like we've put them together here, and deal with the problem.
The United Nations says 53 million tons of electronic waste are generated annually all over the world. It estimates that the amount of the waste will double in less than 30 years. If that happens, electronic waste would become the fastest growing waste stream in the world. Advanced robots are increasingly helping humans in a variety of innovative ways. Now they have found a place in the healthcare system and will help nurses and doctors stay safe during the COVID-19 pandemic.
I can do all kinds of things for elderly people. I can visit with people and brighten their day with social stimulation, entertain and help guide exercise, but also can do talk therapy, take bio readings and help healthcare providers assess their health and deliver treatments.
Grace, which is the newest humanoid robot to join the healthcare fleet. This intelligent machine can take temperatures and record other vital signs of patients. It has been designed in a way to also interact with the elderly and those isolated by the pandemic. Grace is a new prototype of celebrity humanoid robot, Sophia, created by a robotic team in Hong Kong.
So we designed Grace to look professional in a healthcare setting. So that would mean so that she would resemble the sort of human-like appearance of healthcare staff. And so then this would facilitate more natural interactions. A human-like appearance facilitates trust and facilitates a natural engagement because we're wired for human face-to-face interactions. That's just the way human beings are.
Hansen, a while standing between Sophia and Grace, also said that both robots could speak different languages. He said Grace's creation was aimed at relieving the burden of frontline hospital staff dealing with COVID-19 patients.
The company is planning a mass production of grays and offers them to the market by August. The cost of making this robot is similar to a luxury car, but the cost is likely to decrease once the company begins manufacturing it in thousands.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
A tiny worm has wriggled back to life after lying frozen for 24,000 years in the permafrost land of northern Siberia. The organism was recovered from soil samples taken from 3.5 meters below the ground in Russia's Yakutia region. It's a multicellular organism that can withstand extreme cold. This ancient worm has broken the record for the longest living abeloid rotifer worm. Previous research suggests that it could survive for a decade when frozen. Earlier, scientists also discovered 30,000-year-old microscopic worms from northern Siberia. Australian scientists have discovered one of the world's largest ever dinosaur species in the Erromanga area in outback Queensland. Research shows the plant-eating sauropod lived between 92 million and 96 million years ago when Australia was attached to Antarctica. Paleontologists estimated the dinosaur was as long as a basketball court and as tall as a two-story building. That makes it the largest dinosaur ever found in Australia and one of the top five largest ones in the world. Bones of the dinosaur were first uncovered more than a decade ago by cattle farmers. Iranian capital Tehran has hosted a festival of cake sculptors. The event showcases delicious sweets that are carved into eye-catching sculptures. Yusuf Jalali has more.
It's not a piece of cake to bake a sculpture, but pastry chefs here have made it. In the fourth festival of cake sculptures in Iran, sugarcraft artists from across the country have come under one roof in Tehran to cast their spell on these sweets and carve a wide range of fascinating 3D figures out of them. From this tasty coronavirus to this beautiful angel that is picking up the only eatable trash in the world.
Here you can see this angel, which represents the innocent heart of labor children, collecting pieces of trash that contain some of the simplest dreams of a labor child, such as quality food, books, and toys.
My cake is made based on what we call installation art. I have put together iconic structures and monuments of Iran, but when you take a look at them from a special angle, you can see Iran's map.
Some of the cake sculptures here have really pushed the envelope of the art of sculpting, like this bust that shows the 13th century Persian poet Rumi, surrounded with a heavenly garden that's decorated with intricate and mind-boggling details. It took its creator almost a month to finish it.
In the middle, I have put the bust of Rumi, who we refer to as Maulana in Iran. He's holding his most significant verse work, Masnavi Manavi. The garden I created around him and the birds here all are inspired by his poems.
Organizers say they hold the festival every year to modernize the confectionery industry and combine it with fine arts to make it more appealing to the public.
This is Tehran, the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Well, we now have Iranian President Hassan Rouhani, who's coming to a polling station to cast his ballot in the 13th presidential election. I can see President Rouhani is being accompanied by Interior Minister Rahmani Fazli. Also, the head of the presidential office is with him, and he's making his way Well, let's see. Yes, I think President Rouhani I believe President Rouhani has just cast his ballot and he's now sat down. He's about to make a speech. Let's see. And here's the head of the Iranian parliament, the speaker of the Iranian parliament, Ahmad Bogher Qalibov. He's also there and he's also about to cast his ballot in the 13th presidential election. Speaker of the parliament, Qalibov, is there. Let's see. Qalibov is just about, the Speaker of the Parliament, Mohammad Bagher Qalibov, is just about to cast his ballot in the 13th presidential election. Also, there's a parliamentary by-election, Assembly of Experts election, and we have the local and municipal election, the city and village council elections. So Qalibov is just about to cast his ballot, and there's a mass of photographers and journalists there recording that. President Rouhani has sat down. He's about to make a speech. Let's go over.
Is at the Interior Ministry. We're going to bring you more analysis, dear viewers, on this important day for Iran, a crucial day, a pivotal point in Iran's elections and history. So stay tuned. Don't go anywhere. I'll be back in a few minutes' time for more analysis on Iran's presidential election.
Elections in Iran are fourfold: presidential, parliamentary, the Leadership Experts Assembly, and city and village council elections. Municipalities are public institutions whose heads are elected by the council members. These councils in Iran have many duties, like passing annual municipal budgets, comprehensive city plans, developmental plans like building bridges, subways, and tunnels, to name a few. They also get to probe municipalities. City and village council ratifications must also go to the provincial and county governor's offices for approval to ensure coordination with government's laws and decisions. Although per the Islamic Republic of Iran's constitution, city and village councils are one of the main pillars for national administration. Yet problems in the early days of the revolution in 1979 and then the Iran-Iraq war had their elections delayed 20 years later and in 1999. Iran has 31 provinces. Some 73% of Iranians live in cities, and the rest live in villages. All villages, counties, and cities now have a council, the members of which, depending on the region's population, vary between 3 to 21 people. The city and village councils in Iran have a total of 39,575 seats. In Tehran, due to a vast area and a dense population, local associations have been set up in each neighborhood to assist their councils. To member a city or village council in Iran, you must be above 25 years of age, be a believer of Islam or any other official religions in Iran, and accept jurisprudential guardianship. One must enjoy a suitable education level and must have already done his service under the flag or have been exempted from it. Criminals and convicts are deprived from candidacy. Like other elections, the Interior Ministry and its local offices are responsible for the candidate registration and holding of the elections. But the Constitution's Guardian Council, unlike other elections, does not have jurisdiction over municipal elections. Instead, there is a 5-member parliamentary committee in charge of ensuring candidate qualifications and elections due performance. Every Iranian above 18 with a sound mind can vote in a given constituency election, provided his or her residence in that area exceeds 1 year. Even prisoners and convicted individuals can vote in Iran. The candidates have a week's campaign time to promote themselves. They can do that via speeches, debates, billboards, the press, and digital media. Campaigning regulations are very strict, and one is not allowed to advertise against another. These elections are held on a Friday, where in Iran it is the weekend, and jointly with the presidential elections. Afterwards, the names of the elected will be announced by the executive electoral committees, marking the beginning of a 4-year term of rural and municipal council membership.